Well, hello to one and all. Now, I'm just telling you, I was here early, and the hordes can sing that song. I heard it. But I do understand that response. When I was young, I mean, like, wait, long time ago, I sometimes was concerned that I didn't respond emotionally to things in church as older people did. It's like, there's something wrong with me, right? I'm not very spiritual. But there's something about time and experience that does something to your emotions. And now, I, like pastor, I sometimes have a hard time keeping it together when I read certain scriptures. Just reading them brings a flood of meaning to my mind that makes it hard to control emotion. And emotion is not a bad thing. It means that something has struck a nerve in your mind. Something has special meaning for you. And it's not, by definition, spiritual to be emotional, but it's not bad either. So we resonate with those feelings this morning, and want to wish you the best in all your endeavors in Florida. Good to have Sam and James with us this morning. You never know on a snowy day what's going to happen, right? And aren't you glad we decided to meet together in spite of the snow? I fully understand churches that didn't. I mean, if there were a lot of people out today, it wouldn't be good. But since they're staying home, we can get out. Okay. Well, we're studying in Luke chapter 14 this morning for a little while.
Keith?
Yes.
Part of it's perspective, too. This happens maybe once a winter for us, so it's a big thing.
Yes.
You go north, and this is just the other day.
Right. And you and I both remember times whenever we had much bigger storms than this, and it barely made it in the weather, and it's no big deal. You just dealt with it. But
now
it's an event. It's a named storm, right? It has a name. What was this one, dear? Blair?
Yeah.
Is that male or female?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how it identifies.
Okay.
It's not too ferocious.
Okay, well, anyway, it is what it is, and in a few short weeks, probably, there'll be no snow at all, and we'll go on with life. But this morning, here in Luke chapter 14, we have a continued exchange between Jesus and the culture around him. And I once again remind you that to fully appreciate a lot of the things that Jesus said in the Gospels, you have to appreciate the world he was speaking to and the issues that he was facing. It is by habit that when we read Bible that we try to make application to ourselves. What does this mean for me, right? What is this saying to me? There are some passages where you're going to have to ask first, what does this say to them? And it will have some application to you, don't get me wrong. But if you try to just assume that Jesus has dropped in out of heaven and is saying these words to you, you may be scratching your head for a very long time because it just doesn't quite resonate with your experiences. And the words that you use sometimes don't literally make sense in the world you're in. And so here we find in Luke chapter 14, a repeat of a scenario that came up often in the Gospels. It was the Sabbath day. And it came to pass, as he went into the house of one of the chief Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath day, that they watched him. Have you ever felt like somebody's watching you or people are watching you? Maybe if you're up front trying to sing, you think people are watching you, right? Especially for the first time. Yeah, that's an interesting sensation. You tend to be very self-conscious if that happens to be the case. Interesting here that Jesus was eating in the house of a Pharisee. Now, Jesus had a record of not being, of not saying a lot of nice things about the Pharisees. So it's kind of interesting that they invited him. Here he is, and they were watching him. And behold, there was a certain man before him which had the dropsy. Now, dropsy, I don't think, is a term which is used a lot in medical world anymore. More typically, you'd hear the word edema. It's a condition of accumulation of fluid and swelling. So, a problem. People swell for different reasons, but this is not a healthy reason. It's an interesting kind of thing to cure, right? There's some things that people claim cures for that it's like, well, okay, if you say so, right? If somebody has a back pain and they claim they're cured, well, you'd never know, right? They might walk better, but it's not something that you see. But if you cure somebody of dropsy, you're going to see that. There's going to be an obvious change in the way they look. And at any rate, he clearly had a medical problem. And Jesus answering, and of course there's no actual question asked here, except the implied question that they were watching him. The question was, what are you going to do? Here's a person with an obvious problem, obvious physical problem. He had a reputation of fixing obvious physical problems. And so the question in the air is, what are you going to do? Jesus answering spake unto the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? Now, first of all, keep in mind that we talk about Sunday and often call it the Sabbath. It's our Sabbath. For the Jews, the Sabbath was what we would call Saturday. The seventh day. The Christians, in the beginning of the Christian era, began to worship mostly on the first day of the week, as it was the day of the Lord's resurrection. And so there was a change in the emphasized day. But we often still regard our Sunday in the same sort of light that the Jews regarded theirs. Although, certainly in our world, the expectations for behaviors on Sundays has changed a lot. Certainly a lot from what the typical Orthodox Jew would think was appropriate, and a lot compared to what originally Christians thought was appropriate as well. And sometimes we get so far from that that it's no longer even an issue in conversation. People don't even think about Sunday. It's just another day. Nice thing about it is a lot of people get Sunday off, but some people don't. At one time, there was a degree of respect in the school system. You didn't do ball games on Sunday. You didn't have activities that would take people away from church on Sunday. Not so much more anymore. Been pretty much a loss of any sort of respect that way. So I think the question should be posed in the minds of any Christian. Well, what did Jesus think about the Jewish treatment of the Sabbath? And what does that say about how we should respect the day as well? Is that a fair question? An important question, right? Well, let's look briefly at the Jewish attitude toward the Sabbath. Now keep in mind when we say Jewish, that's, oh, I suppose it's kind of like saying, I don't know, American? What's an American? Well, all kind of stuff, right? All kind of colors and kinds and types. It's not a very identified thing. And likewise, in the Jewish world, you have a huge range of belief. All the way from the most conservative imaginable to the most liberal. And so what we tend to be referring to when we talk about Jewish in Sunday school would be thinking about basically the predominant strain of opinion during the time of Jesus. Now, how do we know that? Well, it's kind of tough, right? We can't go back there. There aren't any newspapers that we can read from how it was then. And so we kind of got to piece it together. We don't know for sure. We have a decent idea of what the Pharisees believed because they were constantly criticizing Jesus because he didn't live up to it. And then the predominant strain of Judaism that came out of the first century is what is known as rabbinic Judaism, where you have the system of rabbis, teachers, that propagate basically the ideas of the Pharisees. So we kind of do have an idea of that. So what we're dealing with here is not a liberal form of modern Judaism, but what would be more typical among a conservative Jewish population. So the rabbis divided the observance of Sabbath into 39 different categories of prohibition. And so basically what they said was, well, the Sabbath was given, of course, not to Abraham, but on Mount Sinai. And it was after the activities of building the tabernacle that the Sabbath was instituted. So basically, anything that's involved in building a tabernacle is what you're not supposed to do. And so that's the shorthand for it. Now, it's amazing how much that can get extended and applied. So these 39 categories are the categories that they came up with. Now, in the practical implementation, it's interesting how far this can go. So the first one was carrying. And carrying, in particular, in a public place. So they differentiate between public and private. Now, it might seem to you on the surface like this really is an awful lot of detail and bother and legalism. And it is. But you do have to ask the question, is there any validity? You know, these are the people who receive the law of God. These are the people who claim to speak for God and know his will. Is there any validity to their concerns and contentions? And what is the commentary of Jesus on their position? Which for Christians is the ultimate concern. What did he say? And so I'm not going to read all 39 of these and how they get all worked out. I'll read two or three of them, and then we'll look at some of the detailed responses of Jesus and try to get to some sort of understanding of what his response was. Okay, so carrying, and in particular, carrying in a public place. So if you're not in public, it doesn't apply in the same way. And these things all just become ingrained into your mind if you're born Jewish, right? These are just rules that you live by. I suppose for a lot of people, it's hard to identify by this because in our world, people aren't raised with very many rules. Don't bother me or something like that. You know, is I think what most parents are looking for. This is a little more detailed than that. So the type of work. As we discussed earlier, the initial commandment of the Sabbath was given in connection with the manna. But what possible type of work was involved in gathering a portion of manna for one's family? Obviously, this is carrying. Now, one thing you'll find if you read much rabbinic stuff is that things that seem obvious to them might not be that obvious to you. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like to me it would be just as obvious to say gathering was the thing, because you have to gather the manna before you carry it. Or you could probably think of some other things that are obviously the point here. But the rabbis have an approach, and they argue with one another, and they talk about it, and they argue some more. And whatever the majority agrees with is the answer that the community goes with. That's the way it works. And so carrying was obviously the problem here. And so carrying, in the minds of at least this author, becomes the prototype of all other Sabbath work and prohibitions. As mentioned earlier, the definition of such work is any act which man in which man demonstrates his mastery over nature. But the first act by which man demonstrates such mastery is by taking things from nature and carrying them where he needs them. Therefore, if we are to relinquish our mastery over nature, the first requirement is that we not carry away anything. In a sense, by not carrying, we also relinquish our ownership of everything in the world. A main sign of ownership is that one may take something wherever he pleases. On the Sabbath, we give up some of this ownership. Nothing may be removed from the house. When a man leaves his house, he may carry nothing but the clothing on his back. It is God, not man, who owns all things. So, nothing. This category absolutely forbids all carrying in the street. Even such trivial items such as a key or a handkerchief must be left at home. Certainly, pocketbooks, purses, wallets, and keychains may not be carried. So if you're in a Jewish community on the Sabbath and you're a pickpocket, you're going to be unemployed. The only thing one may carry outdoors are things which are actually worn. Okay, so if we're just reading this and we're looking for truth and insight, this idea that it's important, it's valuable that we don't have ownership in our minds of everything in the world around us, that we're detached from those things, that we recognize God is the supreme owner of all. Isn't that a valuable idea? No doubt about it. Two other questions then. Is this the best way to make that a reality in our life? And then the most important question, is this God's intention for us? Is this how he wants to make this a reality in our life? Well, the Jewish rabbis say yes. This is how you do it. And so then, as a person who is following Jesus, I would have to ask, what does he think of that? Does he abide by that notion? Is this something that he would agree with? Okay, so that's about carrying. I'm not going to address that question any further or the answer yet. Let's look at some other things. There's more discussed here about how important this carrying is. And this just gives you another example of the reasoning of the rabbis sometimes. We can get some idea how serious carrying on the Sabbath is from the following law. When Rosh Hashanah falls on the Sabbath, okay, Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year. And on the Jewish New Year, you typically sound the shofar. And so whenever Rosh Hashanah falls on the Sabbath, the shofar is not sounded. This was legislated by the Sanhedrin for a most interesting reason. Suppose that a synagogue has only one shofar and it became lost or damaged. Imagine the embarrassment and breach of ceremony involved in not being able to sound the shofar on this most solemn day of Rosh Hashanah. How great the temptation to carry a replacement shofar from another synagogue or from someone's home. But this would involve a gross violation of the Sabbath. To avoid this problem, the Sanhedrin decreed that the shofar never be sounded on the Sabbath at all. Okay, so there's an interesting legal theory for you. I guess my response is, if you take that kind of reasoning to its extreme, you're going to come up with a lot more prohibitions of a lot more things than just shofars. Life gets pretty complicated. But once again, this illustrates, in their understanding, this is the will of God. This absolutely must be carried out. And if we need to put up this guardrail to prevent this potential problem, just in case some synagogue has their shofar lost or damaged, then we'll do it. And if this is how we understand God's will, I'm going to say, yeah, that's fine. I might swallow hard, but yeah, if that's it, right? Because you want to do his will. But then there's the question of, does this reflect the will of God? Does, in fact, this present a picture of what's most important to God? And we'll ask Jesus to kind of answer that question. He doesn't talk about the shofar in particular, but the Sabbath keeping in general. So I was going to read some more, but we're a little short on time this morning, so I won't. But it is quite fascinating to look at how they implement their legal thinking. Just quickly, another main prohibition is you can't kindle a fire and you can't put out a fire on the Sabbath. Of course, if there's a fire, your house is burning down, yeah, that's different. That's an exception. But in general, kindling or extinguishing a fire is prohibited. Well, that leads to some surprising conclusions. Did you know that anytime you flip a light switch, you typically create a little arc in the contacts? There's a spark when you do that. And so for the rabbis, that's the same thing as kindling a fire. So if you need a light on for the Sabbath, you leave it on Saturday night. As long as you're not turning it on and not turning it off, you're good. What if you live in New York City on the 134th floor? How do you usually get to the 134th floor?
Elevator.
On an elevator. What do you do to ride the elevator? You push a switch.
So you do the stairs.
You avoid 134th floor apartments. Yes, yeah. That's not where you want to live. Or else you go see your relatives who live somewhere else on the Sabbath. But you have to get there before the Sabbath. And so not only switches, but automobiles, right? So even if it's electric, you got switches. If it's not electric, you've got an internal combustion engine. That's combustion. So it keeps people close to home on Sabbath.
Keep the lights on.
Yeah. And so then one of the other categories here is no cooking on the Sabbath. However, everybody likes hot food, and hot food is not a problem. They actually make stoves that have a Sabbath setting on them. As long as you don't get over 225 degrees, you're not cooking, you're just warming. And of course, you can't turn it on or turn it off on the Sabbath, but you could leave it on. Right? Now, the fact is, if you were raised this way, you get used to it. This is just how you do life. And it's not weird, it's not strange. It's just, this is the way we are. And if you're not used to it, it seems really weird. The question to us in trying to understand what God wants for us is that what he wants? Is that what it takes to please God? Because quite frankly, if it is, that's a pretty easy price to pay to miss eternal punishment. You know, it's a hassle a little bit, but it doesn't compare to eternity. But is it? Well, we find in the Gospels that Jesus is constantly getting in trouble with the Pharisees over the Sabbath. It usually is over healing. But as well, they criticize his disciples at one point because as they walked through the field of grain, they ate some as they went. And of course, one of the categories that's prohibited is harvesting on the Sabbath. And gleaning the whole process. You know, if you grab a head of wheat, you don't just pop it in your mouth. You might once, but you won't twice. You want to get rid of the chaff and all the fiber stuff. I mean, fiber is good for you and all, but not that kind. So they were breaking all sorts of rules by that act in the Pharisees' mind. And so, at any rate, Jesus often runs afoul of the Pharisees on this matter. So let's look at a couple examples. We saw one right here. And in this example, let's read the rest of it and see what Jesus says. So he was on display here. The question is, what are you going to do with this guy who has an obvious, serious physical problem that nobody can fix? And so Jesus puts the question out there. Is this lawful? Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And Luke tells us they held their peace. They kept quiet. And he took him and healed him and let him go. And answered them, saying, which of you shall have a donkey or an ox fallen into a pit and will not straightway pull him out on the Sabbath day? And they could not answer him again to these things. And so in this particular example, Jesus doesn't give us any general principle, but he clearly poses a question for those who are criticizing him silently that puts him in a position where they don't want to talk about it. Earlier, I believe it was in the very last chapter, he healed and made a statement about the Sabbath and healing. That's not one I'd copied down here, but since I've launched off into the middle of it, let's just revisit that right quick. He says, ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan hath bound, lo, these 18 years, be loosed from his bond on the Sabbath day? So here again, he answers them with a question, questioning the consistency of their beliefs. On the one hand, you would gladly and willingly and lawfully, in your mind, loose your animal, lead him away to watering. But you condemn loosing this human being from the bondage of Satan. So that puts him in a rather bad light. But there's some other passages where we have maybe a little more of a conclusion from Jesus. So in Matthew chapter 12, we have this one. And when he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they ask him, that is Jesus, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? And he said unto them, what man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much better is a man, or how much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore, it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. Okay, so Jesus doesn't tell us everything we'd probably like to know at this point. But let me just ask you, what is the effective answer that he gives to the position that he's facing? In other words, we read a little bit about the rabbi's approach. What do these words say to that? Notice that in the rabbi's approach, it's very detailed, it's very laid out, it's reasoned legally, it is specified down to the detail, this and this and this and this, right?
This pushes me to immediately say, oh Jesus, what is good here in this situation, or in that, whatever situation I'm in on the Sabbath. It makes me say, Lord, I don't know what is well, what is the best thing to do, but I want your will. And so it makes me introspective and consider, because if I have a list, I just check it off and then do what else I want. I mean, it doesn't keep me in relationship with him.
But notice how that is a basic rejection of their approach. Okay. To say it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath day would just send a lawyer mad, right? It's like, well, what do you mean well? Define well. Give me five instances. he's rejecting their whole approach. Instead of taking them as a fellow rabbi into the details of their reasoning and saying, aha, here's where you've missed it. You need to do this, this, and this instead of that, that, and that. He shows a degree of impatience with their nitpickiness. That's not the point in his mind of the Sabbath. That's not his God's concern. So that is how this particular instance tends to lead us to think. He has said more things, so we'll look at some other things. We won't just draw our conclusion from one passage. What else do we have from Jesus? In Mark chapter 2, and he said unto them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Okay, so think about what that suggests. He seems to be accusing them of understanding things in terms of the Sabbath is the most important issue of all, and man must be molded to fit it. Right? So here's the Sabbath, and we're going to... that's what cannot be broken, no matter what. And Jesus says, you know, you really got this upside down. Sabbath is for the good of man. It's not a hoop for him to jump through. It's not a legal foundation on which to build all sorts of notions of things for him to perform for. Now we would want to go ahead and understand then how it is good for him. Is it good for him to just do whatever he wants? Or is there that aspect of respect? Is there that aspect of it being a holy day for his good? You know, there's a lot of people would say, oh, it's for my good. I can just have a great time. That's good for me.
Indulge my flesh.
Right? Well, that doesn't follow if you follow Jesus very far. Good for you may not be what appeals to your flesh. Probably isn't. But this, again, consists of him taking issue with their approach, with their paradigm for understanding how to deal with God's will. And he says, you've got it upside down. Another passage here in John chapter 5. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity, 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and his infirmity resulted in him not being able to walk, and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he said unto him, wilt thou be made whole? And the impotent man answered him, "Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me." Jesus said unto him, "Rise, take up thy bed and walk." And immediately the man was whole and took up his bed and walked, and on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, "It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed." In fact, you can't even carry your pillow or your chains. I mean, your keys, if you had any. He answered them, "He that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk." Then asked they him, "What man is that which said unto thee, take up thy bed and walk?" Right, we want a warrant for him. Now, in thinking about Jesus and his actions, he seems to have no hesitation whatsoever in contradicting the expectations of Pharisees on this issue. Some people have actually been so brash as to suggest that Jesus had no regard for the Sabbath. But I don't think that's true. I think his problem is with the approach of his generation to defining the will of God. The will of God is the big issue with Jesus. He came to tell us what God's will is for us. And the Pharisees were also telling us what God's will is for us. And he's contradicting what they say. And so, I don't think that Jesus, in meeting somebody new, would suggest that they go carry their bed somewhere. It's not the case that he generally thought bed carrying on the Sabbath was a good deal. But imagine the impact of this. First of all, if you see a Jewish man in a Jewish society carrying a bed on Sabbath, it's going to get attention, right? Because that was unacceptable. It was unheard of. It was unthinkable. And so the first question is, why are you doing that? Well, the next question is, because he told me. Then who is he? So this was a powerful way to point to the source of all this as being Jesus. And of course, the backstory is, it's the one who healed me. So it's one thing for somebody to have told him, go carry your bed, somebody who's a loser in the world. But this is the one who healed me. Who did what? The one who healed me. And so some of these actions of Jesus don't reflect a cavalier attitude toward an observance of a day of separation. They represent an opportunity in his world to make a really big statement. And even the Jews had exceptions for the Sabbath. If human life was at risk, it's generally accepted that, yeah, you do things that otherwise are prohibited. And if you remember in Matthew 12, whenever Jesus is accosted about the Sabbath, he starts bringing up examples of things in the Old Testament, such as David, who ate the showbread, which was unlawful for him to eat, and how that he says in the temple, the priests profane the Sabbath every day in order to keep other parts of the law, sort of an effort to show them that the priorities you have in your mind, the system you have for determining God's will, is baloney. It's just not right. And so it's not that he didn't have a respect for things that were holy. He had no respect for a society that had come to disregard God's will and instead had supplanted it with their evaluation of what it amounted to. Well, we're out of time. So if you have questions, comments, or snide remarks, you can save those for next week. And the hordes can email them to me. And by the way, I'll tell you this. I gave my dad an opportunity to preach this morning, and he passed up on it. So I know he didn't have a specific message for you. So, but anyway, if it turns out that he did, we'll get you a copy. Okay. Thank you all for your kind attention. And we have a song in closing. And then we invite you all to join us at the Farm Bureau, because there's a lot of food that needs to be consumed, and we need your help. So you're welcome.